You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? I am Ben Dubose, and this is Locked On Rockets. It's now the Tuesday after Labor Day. We're in full swing with college football, the NFL starting up this week, and, well, the other thing that's starting up, NBA training camp, September 24th. We're within really just 2.5 short weeks of Rockets basketball finally getting going, and as we get closer to the training camp, we are finally starting to get some real news because veteran NBA players that haven't signed, well, they need homes. One of those is Carl Landry. The news of the weekend, Jaron Wolfson, a veteran NBA reporter out of Minneapolis, says that the Rockets, Spurs, Lakers, and Pacers are interested in Carl Landry. Landry, of course, was a former Rocket from 2007 through 2010, and more recently, he was with the Philadelphia 76ers this past season. And he was definitely a productive player. He was the only player last year to play 500-plus minutes and to average 22 points and 9 rebounds per 36 minutes, all on a field goal percentage of 50% or better. Now, he clearly has defensive limitations, and he was released from the Sixers for a reason. Now, to be fair, the Sixers have a very crowded front court with Joel Embiid coming back. They needed a roster spot to sign one of their second-round picks, and really, at 33 years old, that's what Carl Landry will be when training camp opens. He doesn't really fit with a rebuilding project in Philadelphia. But there's a reason he was released. He's not a world beater. However, he's also not just some shell of his former self. He is still a productive NBA player. So why are the Rockets interested, and do I believe they are? Yeah, I do. One thing that's really interesting, Jaron Wolfson, the reporter out of Minneapolis that mentioned this, number one, he's a good reporter. Secondly, he mentioned the Rockets first. Rockets, Spurs, Lakers, Pacers. And generally, reporters don't just randomly throw out an order. They keep with the order that's told to them by the agent or whatever the source is, typically somewhere within a sports agency. And granted, you know, an agent can toss things out for a lot of reasons. It may be the truth. It could also be leverage or something else. But if the agent is listing the Rockets first in his communication with the journalist, that's interesting. And is it a hole for the Rockets? Sure it is. Right now, you know, Giannis Bonaventura is not signed. Right now, Ryan Anderson is your starter at power forward, and he's an injury risk. Behind him, your backup is probably either Michael Beasley or Montrezl Harrell. That's not a firm situation. So certainly there's a case for the Rockets to be interested, but I'm going to look at this from two angles. There's the basketball fit, and then there's the Rockets roster and where Landry fits into that. I'm going to start part one with what he offers in terms of basketball. I touched on his per 36 numbers earlier. Yes, Landry is still a good player, because, and you can see that in the numbers. However, how he gets those numbers is very different from when he was in Houston before, from 2007 through 2010. Back then, Carl Landry was a rim rocker. Yes, he was undersized at 6'8", 6'9", if you want to be generous, as a power forward, but his legs were pogo sticks. He was so explosive that he was able to get to the rim and just shoot just get up and make plays incredibly quickly. His years in Houston, almost three full seasons, 70% of his shots came within 9 feet of the basket, and really, 54% of those within 2 feet of the basket. And you know, when 54% of your shots are within 2 feet of the basket, that generally means you're getting a lot of dunks. Now, what happens as players age, which Carl Landry has, he turns 33 in a couple of weeks, they lose some of their athleticism. He's had on and off knee issues, and this past season in Philadelphia, let's take a look. Only 37% of his shots were within 2 feet. So that's from 54 to 37, that's a big drawback. I think where you can see it more, 52% of his game, his shots, came from 10 feet or further away. That is a big change from early in his career when 70% of his game was inside of 10 feet. So he's doing what a lot of players do as they get into, you know, their 30s. They lose their athleticism, their ability to finish at the rim. So if they're going to stay in this league, if they're going to have a long career, they have to add range. They have to compensate for what they lose in athleticism with an ability to shoot. And that's what Carl Landry is doing. And that's encouraging. Because it's not just that Carl Landry is aimlessly, you know, hoping that he's going to make more of these shots. He is making more of these mid-range shots. When he was in Houston, those 3 years, Landry shot 39.5% from the 10 to 15 foot range. Last year in Philadelphia, he shot over 55%. An NBA big who can shoot 55% in the 10 to 15 foot range, that's pretty rare. That's a true pick and pop big, which is at a premium in today's NBA, and especially for coaches like Mike D'Antoni. So it's not just Landry throwing stuff against the wall. He has genuinely worked on his shot. He is improving. And now, really, we're in the second phase of Carl Landry's career. You know, early in his career, he was the rim rocker, we said earlier. He was a guy who was just so explosive. I think Rockets fans remember him, not just for the dunks, but also the blocks. You know, he was never a great defensive player, but, you know, those pogo stick legs allowed him to get some blocks. Everybody remembers the playoff game in Utah when he lost a tooth battling for a rebound at one point in the game, and then later that same game had the game-saving block of Jaron Williams. That's the kind of player that that Carl Landry is. He's able to adjust and get up that quickly. That's who he was in Houston. I can think of that. He was such a freak athlete. He got shot, a complete freak incident off the court, shot in the leg, and within 3 weeks, he was back playing NBA basketball. That's how much of a freak athlete he was. He's not that guy anymore, but he is able to, you know, compensate with his improved shooting. And that's a very real skill. If you look at player efficiency rating, or PER, the big drop-off in Landry's career was from 2013 to 2015. You know, he was consistently had a 17-18 PER the years before that. Then when he went to Sacramento, he kind of fell off the map. That, in my opinion, it was right after he turned 30. That was Landry, you know, losing his athleticism and trying to figure out, okay, how can I compensate for that? And then, finally, this past year, it took him a couple of years of consistently working on his jumper. And now, as we talked about, those mid-range numbers have significantly improved. And so the player you saw in Philadelphia last year, a PER of 22.4, that's a career high, making an astounding over 55% from the 10 to 15-foot range. You're really seeing a rebirth in the second part of his career. And really, even though he's a different player, many of the same underlying traits are still there. Because it's not just that Landry had this quick leaping ability. He was a very high IQ player. You know, if all it took was those pogo stick legs to succeed in the NBA, Stromile Swift would have been a star. But the problem with Stromile Swift and a lot of players like that, he did not have the basketball IQ. So even with the athleticism, it was largely useless. With Landry, yes, he was quick. Yes, he had that quick twitch muscle fiber like Russell Westbrook does, but he was also very smart. He knew how to move without the ball. He knew when to crash the offensive glass. He saw things from a very intellectual perspective that allowed him to see moves, you know, two and three passes in advance that would allow him to do things that an average player could not. He had that high basketball IQ. Well, he still has that. It's just, you know, he doesn't have that leaping ability anymore. So instead of using that high IQ to position himself for dunks, he's using that high IQ to set the pick and to find the hole to where he can get that open 15-foot jumper. So it's still there. The things that made him a viable contributor in Houston from 2007 through 2010 are still there. He's just having, you know, they're just being manifest in different ways. And some team that signs him is going to reap the rewards. Now, it doesn't come without risk. He is a below-average defensive player. Even at his most athletic, when he could block a few shots, he was still, you know, a little below average at best. The last couple of years, his DBPM, that's box score plus minus, has been below negative 2. That's not good. Defensive win shares barely above 0. So certainly, he's not an impact player on the defensive end. But if he's coming off the bench, you can mitigate that. You can put him in the right matchups to succeed and maybe avoid certain matchups if there's a team that just has too many options and someone that he can't match up with. And really, if you look at the metrics, you can win with players like that. You know, obviously he was part of winning teams in Houston, and this past year, his win shares for 48 minutes, 0.176. That was the highest since his 2009-2010 season in Houston. So he was a very effective player last year in Philadelphia. And another analytics thing, I'm a big fan of the player comparisons on Basketball Reference. And if you look at Carl Landry's page, the most frequent comparison that comes up is Ryan Anderson. He's top three on one metric and number one on another, depending on the scale that you use. And that's not to say that Carl Landry and Ryan Anderson are the same player. They are both offense-first power forwards who have some struggles defensively. Now, Ryan Anderson is a good to very good three-point shooter, whereas that's not something that Carl Landry has been. Although he is trying to add it, I don't think it's a coincidence that Carl Landry shot 13 threes last year, which is by far more than he's shot in any other season in his NBA career. You can see that it's something he's working on. He actually made 46% of that small subset of threes last year. So if he can add that, you know, the more the merrier. You know, he's trying to build range, and if he can add a three, stretch fours are all the rage for a reason. But at this point, no, he's not a three-point shooter, and Ryan Anderson is. So that's why Ryan Anderson has an $80 million contract, and Carl Landry does not. However, if your organization thinks that Ryan Anderson is a starting caliber player in the NBA, then I don't think it's a big stretch to say, you know what, that same organization would probably view Carl Landry as a good basketball player as well. Now, that's simply Carl Landry, the basketball player. That's part one.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Part two of this analysis is the business fit. How does Landry work with the Rockets financially, and how does he work within their current roster? This is where it gets a little bit dicier. My initial reaction was no, because of exactly what I just got done saying. He's so similar to Ryan Anderson. You want more of a mix and match. And so, no, I do not think the Rockets prioritize Carl Landry ahead of Donatas Mataunas. Because, first off, Mataunas is still in his mid-20s. He's on the upswing of his NBA career, whereas Carl Landry's 33. I don't see the Rockets trying to get an aging player that's likely on the downslide. The other thing, Mataunas, and I've said this before, he gives you a diverse skill set. He's someone who, with his length, his ability to play position defense, his ability to move the ball, he gives you things that Ryan Anderson does not. So depending on the matchup, maybe Ryan Anderson's preferable, maybe Donatas Mataunas is, but you can go various ways at power forward. Whereas Ryan Anderson and Carl Landry, they do much of the same thing. So it's not as seamless of a fit. However, there's a couple of things after you pointed out. First off, Donatas Mataunas isn't signed. Beggars can't be choosers. Right now, as I said earlier, the Rockets have either Michael Beasley or Montrezl Harrell as your backup power forward. That's probably not good enough for a team that wants to be at least a quasi-contender. I don't know if they'll be as good as the Warriors, but they certainly have ideas on being at least a middle-of-the-pack playoff team, if not a little bit better. So it's a position they could clearly upgrade, and Carl Landry is an upgrade on what they have on the roster right now. Secondly, beyond just the fit with the rotation ideally, the other thing, Ryan Anderson, despite getting paid $80 million, yes, he's injury prone. There are concerns with that. So Landry, as someone with a similar skill set, if you're able to bring him in, he does hedge a little bit of those injury concerns with Ryan Anderson. He's someone that you can put at power forward, space the floor a little bit, maybe not to three-point range, but at least out to 18 to 20 feet, and you can put him in that pick-and-roll game with James Harden, and he can do many of the same things. He won't be a fish out of water the way, if you're turning to Montrezl Harrell or Michael Beasley, and you put them in that Ryan Anderson role. Landry would provide you some Ryan Anderson insurance. I've heard some people say that they expect Montrezl Harrell to step up and take that role. And truth be told, Harrell profiles as someone with some of the similar skill sets to Carl Landry, or a younger Carl Landry, I should say. But you know what? If you want to be a winner, you've got to make someone like Montrezl Harrell prove it. There is no one hurt except for Les Alexander's bank account. And unless you are Les Alexander's personal accountant or Les himself, that shouldn't matter to you. The Rockets, one great thing about this organization, they have not been cheap when it comes to promoting competition, especially in training camp. As David Wiener, a.k.a. B-Mathog, on Twitter pointed out, they've brought in veterans like Aaron Brooks, Marcus Camby to training camp in recent years just to provide competition. So, you know what? If you want to be a winner, you don't just give a job, a rotation spot to someone like Montrezl Harrell. Because is he there yet? No. You could see signs, but there were issues with his temperament. There are also issues with his ability to get in foul trouble as well as his just subpar defense overall, he's got a lot of strides to make. So you, if you're a winning team, the more competition you get, the better. You don't just hand Montrezl Harrell that job. If you can provide someone like Carl Landry, a proven veteran that's won in the NBA before, that's great. And one thing I should have mentioned but didn't in the basketball portion of this, Carl Andrews had playoff success. He was a good playoff performer in Houston, and the last playoff team he was on, the 2013 Golden State Warriors, that was the first Warriors team that broke through. That was when they upset Denver in the first round. That was back the last really good Denver team, and then pushed the Spurs to six games in the second round. Landry was really good for 36 minutes in those playoffs, 21 points, 9 rebounds. What was his per? Over 21, he was really good on a good Warriors team. So yes, he provides you some pedigree, and you know, if you can provide a player like that, just like Nene, all the better. If nothing else, he's someone that a Montrezl Harrell can soak up knowledge from. And if Montrezl Harrell outplays him and earns that rotation spot, great. But you don't just count on Montrezl Harrell to develop into that guy. And quite frankly, the same goes for Michael Beasley. You know, yes, Beasley is on a good contract. He had his moments last year, and at $1.5 million, no doubt the Rockets were going to keep him. But he has not proven that Michael Beasley can contribute to a winner. There are very real questions as to how Mike Beasley fits in a Mike D'Antoni system. Because even though he can put up points, one thing Michael Beasley does, he shoots, and then he shoots some more. He is not known for moving the ball. So while on paper, Mike Beasley and Carl Landry might seem similar, they're both subpar defensive power forwards if you put them there, Carl Landry is someone who works well within a team concept. He is a proven veteran. Whereas Michael Beasley, there are very real questions as to whether he is going to move the ball well enough to play consistent minutes in a Mike D'Antoni system. So the status of, you know, Michael Beasley at $1.5 million, who the Rockets kept, I don't think they know that he's going to play big minutes. I just think his contract's so low that they said, what the hell? Sure, we're going to keep him because there's no downside to doing it. There's only upside if he plays well. And Montrezl Harrell, from a business standpoint, those guys are not guaranteed rotation spots. Carl Landry can outplay those guys from a basketball standpoint as well as from a business standpoint. Now, turning to Landry's personal finances, this is where it gets dicey. There's pros and there's cons. The pros, Carl Landry is not poor. His contract was not unguaranteed. The Sixers are going to pay him every penny of the $6.5 million that he was owed. He was simply released because they had to clear a roster spot. It was not because, you know, they could get out of his contract. So in theory, Landry is someone who, you know, could sign for the minimum because he's already getting a contract somewhere else, so the Rockets could pick him up on the cheap. However, it's not that simple, and it never is. First off, you know, just because he can sign for the minimum doesn't mean that he's going to. You know, he's a businessman. All these players are. If he can get more money somewhere else, he's certainly going to consider it. You know, I go back to the Josh Smith situation 2 years ago. You know, while in theory, yes, he was getting that money from the Pistons, you know what? The Rockets dipped into one of their exceptions to sign him, because if they hadn't, certainly someone else could have offered more money. So it's not as simple. Just because he can take the minimum doesn't mean he necessarily is. Another thing are expectations, and this is where it might get really tricky with the Rockets. I'm going to read you guys a couple of tweets from Sixers beat writers about why Landry and the Sixers parted ways. One, Landry wants to play this year to earn his next big deal, and big man minutes are likely scarce with the Sixers. Another, Carl Landry wanted a chance to get playing time in a contract year, source said. Would have been buried in a deep front court rotation with the Sixers. So even though he may not earn that much more money this year, he's thinking about his next year. He is going to be a free agent next summer. And if he goes somewhere, you know, and just doesn't play, then he's not going to have a case to earn more money next summer. So again, this is where it might get dicey if the Rockets, you know, if they do bring Donatas Moniunas back, and if they do, he's clearly going to be the number two power forward, then there's not an immediate role for Carl Landry to play. You would have him kind of in that Pablo Prigioni role. What Prigioni is to the backcourt, Landry would be to the frontcourt. Basically, competition, spot minutes, a veteran presence, that sort of thing. And that's not that may not be enough for someone who's wanting to play for his next contract. However, some of that might be agent speak. Because really, Carl Landry's next contract, he's going to be 34 years old when his next deal starts in the 2017-2018 season. He's never been a good defensive player. Now he's clearly a below-average defensive player. At 34, a subpar defensive guy, that's typically not the profile for getting a next contract more than, you know, a couple of million here and there. That's typically the David West phase of a player's career, where a veteran will typically go to, you know, a contender that he hopes he can win with. So while the agents always got to think about the next deal, is Landry really going to be that picky to where he has to have a clear route to minutes if he's going to accept that deal? I don't know, but it's certainly possible. Another parallel, you look at Josh Smith last summer. You know, it's no one ever understood why he left the Rockets for the Clippers. Well, that was why. Even though he had a good fit in Houston, he didn't have a clear path to minutes. Monty Unis coming back, Terrence Jones, there were expectations for him. So really, Smith could have been the third-team power forward for all he knew. The Rockets were not going to commit to him as a starter or the second-team guy. So he went somewhere in L.A., even if it was a bad fit, Doc Rivers could guarantee him minutes. And for some players, that wins out. Now, I do think that Josh Smith came to regret that. He basically admitted as such. And not all players would make the same decisions. But, you know, you can't blame Landry if he does. And that is what his agent is saying. And while I'm, you know, throwing some cold water on it, I'm saying I don't necessarily think that's the way it's going to play out. You know, it's not as simple as Landry's just going to go to the Rockets because he's comfortable with them and he likes Mac D'Antoni's system. They are going to have to make it work for him on other fronts. The other issue, contending. The Rockets are a good team, and among the teams on his list, they should definitely be better than the Lakers and Pacers, although maybe the Lakers and Pacers can offer more playing time. And, you know, again, if the Rockets, they bring Monty Unis back, that's going to be tricky for them. The other team on the list, the Spurs. Are the Rockets as good as the Spurs? Probably not. However, it's not like there's a clear path to minutes on the Spurs either. They've got LaMarcus Aldridge at power forward. You know he's going to play at least 35 minutes a night. They've got Gasol at center, Pau Gasol, signed him this summer after Tim Duncan's retirement. Gasol's going to play at least 30 minutes a game. They signed David Lee as a backup. They signed Dwayne Dedman from the Magic, a pretty promising young big man who I would think at least plays 15 minutes a game at center. So it's not like there's a clear path in San Antonio ever. Now, that hasn't stopped some players before. Certainly, I think of Kevin Martin, who knew he wasn't going to get that many minutes, but he's at a point in his career. You know what? Spurs culture appeals to a lot of people, so that's where he wanted to go. And maybe that's the case with Landry. However, I don't think the Spurs offer him... I don't think the Spurs can offer him any more clarity in terms of minutes or in terms of money than the Rockets can. They can offer a little bit more in terms of culture, in terms of proven winning. So maybe the Rockets need to sweeten the pot somewhere else. Maybe it's, you know, a wink nod with minutes. Maybe it's playing up the old days. You know, show them all the YouTube highlights of toothless Carl Landry and all the great moments from 2007 through 2010. I don't know. But of the four teams mentioned in that original report by Darren Wolfson, Rockets, Spurs, Lakers, and Pacers, I do like the Rockets' chances. There is a case to be made that, you know what, Landry for around the minimum, even if Monty Unis comes back, he can fit with this team. But is it going to work out? You know, I would give them the best shot, but I wouldn't say it's better than 50-50. It's one of those things, if I had to peg it, I'd say, you know, I might give the Rockets a 35-40% shot, but the other teams, you know, are fairly close behind. So, you know, while the Rockets might be, you know, the favorites in terms of, you know, a good fit all around between Landry's skill set fitting what the Rockets want to do, potential need at the position, his history with the team, there are so many variables that I think you would have to take the field, so it's tough to pencil Carl Landry into your rotation. However, the rumor is interesting. I think he proved last year that he can be a positive basketball player, a contributor to a team, and would I be excited if the Rockets signed him? From a fan standpoint, yes, because who doesn't love Carl Landry? He was so fun to watch play going back a few years, and from a basketball standpoint, yeah, I think he can add to the team as well. Anyway, that's all I can think to add on the Carl Landry front. You know, when you look at what we're going to do with these Locked On Rockets podcasts, I can't imagine that we're going to have too many podcasts spending 25 minutes talking about Carl Landry, but you know what? We're still 2.5 weeks from training camp opening. There's not that much going on in NBA circles, so I'm thankful to Darren Wolfson and Carl Landry for at least getting this rumor out there and giving us something to talk about and giving us something to discuss as it pertains to the upcoming Rockets season and a move that might be made. This is the first concrete rumor we've heard in weeks. Donatas Monty Unis, while, again, we're hopeful he's going to re-sign with the Rockets, last hard news we heard with Demo was in late July from Mark Byrd at Fox 26. Since then, it's been a dead period. Again, not unprecedented with NBA free agents or restricted free agents, especially some of these situations. I think back to Eric Bledsoe a couple of years ago, have drug out all the way to mid-September, right before Media Day, because that's the only thing that really exerts true leverage to get a deal done is the opening of training camp. Because, you know, if you miss training camp, you are going to be behind the eight ball in terms of rotations, learning the system, all that sort of stuff. So there is pressure, but until then, not a lot. And so I think that's why Demo's gone dark, both sides trying to get the best deal they can. And until the season gets really close, there's not going to be that deadline pressure to get a deal done. So in the intermediate, happy to talk about Carl Landry. Thank you again to Darren Wolfson for finally giving us a real Rockets rumor to dissect. That'll about do it for this show on Tuesday, September 6th. We will be back later this week. We've got a couple of things in the works, both with the Rockets announcing team. They're going to announce some changes very soon to what they're going to do, both TV and radio broadcasts for the upcoming season. We will have some exclusive interviews immediately after that leaks. I'm also working on a pretty cool story involving the Red Rowdies and one of Houston's most famous superfans. You'll get to talk to him or her, I should say, and hear a little bit about the superfan experience, the Red Rowdies, and a little bit of talk as Rockets and especially the fans get ready for this upcoming 2016-2017 season, one in which we're all very excited. So again, signing off, this is Ben DuBose. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben DuBose. You can follow the show at Locked On Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And you can always email the show at lockedonrockets@gmail.com with any sponsorship inquiries, longer questions, whatever you might want to know. So again, thank you for listening. I'm Ben, and I will be talking with you again very soon.